This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, September 18th, 2020. I'm Caleb Brown. The police power is generally reserved to the states, and even there, state and local officials are limited in the degree to which they may restrict individuals' activities. In his contribution to the Cato Institute's new Pandemics and Policy, Ilya Shapiro provides details about what state and local officials ought to be doing to respect liberty as they work to stem the spread of COVID-19. When we tally up what governments, state and local governments, and to a lesser extent, the federal government, the actions that they've taken in response to this pandemic, what comes to mind when you think of the most egregious examples of violating Americans' rights? Again, understanding that this is a very extraordinary time in America.
Right. Well, first you have to recognize that this is all under the rubric of state police powers, which doesn't have anything to do with the men and women in blue. It's kind of the authority to make law for public health and safety. And some of the egregious things are, you know, delineating essential and non-essential services and products. You can buy plants or vegetables, but not seeds. Or roping off certain lines in the grocery stores and not others, rather than maintaining the flow of people in them. Kind of these, you know, if we're trying to maintain physical distancing or these other kinds of restrictions that we've all been used to, then allowing a drive-through liquor store but not a drive-through outdoor church service makes no sense whatsoever.
So if these delineations are improper, what guidance should people be taking, that is, elected lawmakers and public health officials, when it comes to trying to find out what is within their power? What can they actually do to prevent the spread of a disease and still stay within constitutional limits?
Well, we have to remember there are both federal constitutional limits and the states themselves have their own constitutional limits. That is, from the U.S. Constitution, that's about individual rights. So just because there's a pandemic doesn't mean that a state can do away with search warrants or start regulating interstate commerce in the name of health and safety. Whether it's religious liberty or the Second Amendment, courts have already, during the COVID-19 pandemic, stepped in and said, you know, you can't treat gun stores differently than you're treating stores for other kinds of consumer products, for example, and the outdoor church services have to be treated the same way as well. For the state limits, those are even greater, and states limit what kind of emergency powers governors can have. They limit who can exercise emergency powers. There are restrictions on public health officials trying to close businesses. No, that has to be done by the governor or the legislature. And so the Constitution, or the idea of limited government and enumerated powers, individual rights, that doesn't get thrown out in a pandemic, even though courts will give broad deference to government actors to do certain things, to impose restrictions that would be anathema in normal times.
Governors don't want to look like they're not doing anything, and overreaction is pretty natural, I would say, in some of these cases, especially when you consider what the optics are of not overreacting. So that seems to pose its own difficulty.
Sure. Although it's a moving target. You know, we're 6 months into the pandemic now, and the types of measures that would be considered legitimate back in March or April are no longer. We know that you can narrowly tailor rules, that distancing and the spread of the virus works differently indoors versus outdoors, that ventilation and filtration is very important, that masks can do something. So kind of draconian across the board shutdowns, it's hard to justify that sort of thing, even though in the early stages, when we knew nothing about the virus or its transmission or who was being affected, those things change. And that's understandable. It doesn't mean that the scope of our rights or the scope of government powers changes over time. It just means that governments have to pass a certain smell test when exercising restrictions on people's freedom. And as we learn more about what's necessary or kind of the cost-benefit calculus, so too a legal or even moral evaluation of what the government is doing can change as we learn more about the virus.
Have courts moved with sufficient speed in dealing with this? Courts themselves have had difficulties meeting. They've shut down for some purposes during this pandemic.
Well, we have federalism, and that's a beautiful thing. Also, different states, different localities even can react differently given the differing facts on the ground. And a rural state might have different needs and different types of regulations, different businesses for that matter, and different court operations than urban states. A lot of courts have moved to virtual hearings. A lot of them have now even resumed jury trials. I guess they space out where the jurors sit and things like that. And so courts have become more adaptable. The speeding up of digital filings. Now, a lot of courts already had the ability to allow counsel to make their filings electronically. Well, now even more are doing so to facilitate the wheels of justice turning. And courts, again, they're deferential. They don't want to do something that will harm people at the end of the day. That's not their job. That's the police power is inherent in the elected representatives to govern and legislate for the health and safety. But they have not hesitated to push back on state governments or governors assuming powers that are not in their state constitution, or mayors treating willy-nilly certain disfavored rights, or what have you. So I think we've had kind of a similar dance or a similar checking and balancing during the pandemic that we have in normal times.
Ilya Shapiro is publisher of the Cato Institute's annual Supreme Court Review, out now. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast anywhere you please and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.